We're going this afternoon to the second of seven great metaphors recorded in the Gospel of John that Jesus used to open the mystery of who he is to his followers. Last time, Jesus identified himself as the bread of life in the afterglow of the miraculous feeding of the 5,000. Jesus, the great master teacher, so masterfully uses illustrations, object lessons, visual aids in his teaching. He, being fully God and yet fully man, understood how effective the use of tangible things is to excellent teaching or communication. An aptly illustrated lesson sticks so much better than one without. So, in what setting would you expect Jesus to be as he declares to his followers, "I am the light of the world"? Likely in a setting that has something to do with light, right? Exactly. The first part of John chapter 8, the Gospel of John chapter 8, is the familiar account of the incident of the adulterous woman. This could well have happened right at dawn or shortly thereafter, verse 2. The assembled crowd of people must have traveled to the temple in the dark, or at best, the dim light of daybreak, when Jesus turned his attention from the adulterous woman and addressed the crowd, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. How would you rather walk the streets of Jerusalem? In the dark, or following someone who is the light of the world?" Amazingly fitting illustration, isn't it? Also, I understand that in the treasury, verse 20, of chapter 8, where this incident occurred, stood two huge golden lampstands on which hung a multitude of lamps lighted after the evening sacrifice, probably every evening during the Feast of the Tabernacles, chapter 7, verse 2, diffusing their brilliance, it is said, over all the city. Around these great lights, the people danced with great rejoicing. Perhaps the largest display of artificial light that these people had ever seen. It's in this setting that Jesus declares, "I am the light of the world." This glow, though, is nothing compared to John chapter 1, the true light that lighteth every man that cometh into the world. Have you ever thought about what light actually is? How would you define light? Webster's definition number one is divided into three parts, A, B, and C. Here's what they say. A, something that makes vision possible. This is a collegiate dictionary. B, the sensation aroused by stimulation of the visual receptors, brightness. C, an electromagnetic radiation in the wavelength range, including infrared, visible, ultraviolet, and X-rays, and traveling in a vacuum with a speed of about 186,281 miles per second, specifically the part of this range that is visible to the human eye. Now, having heard the first of 15 definitions that Webster gives, tell me in terms that we can all understand, what is light? The article in the World Book, and for you technology young people, I feel sorry for you. You may not even know what an encyclopedia is, right? But back in the day, the article in the Encyclopedia on Light begins by explaining how necessary light is for human existence. It tells about things light does for us and what man has done with light. And then it commences to ask, quote, "What is light?" This question has been a puzzle for centuries, unquote. While looking through this 12-page article in this encyclopedia, not once did I see a single reference to God. Do you know we can't even define what light is apart from God? 1 John 1, verse 5 says, God is light. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all. In Numbers and elsewhere, God dwelt among his people in the form of, oh, let's be more responsive than that. That's a way to wake up. I'll do it again. In Numbers and elsewhere, God dwelled among his people in the form of, thank you, light. Various appearances of heavenly beings in both the Old Testament and the New Testament were likely in the form of light. At the birth of Jesus, in the middle of the night, the shepherds were terribly frightened as the glory, G-L-O-W-R-Y, get it? Glory of the Lord was shining around them. Saul's conversion, a blinding light, the glory of God. At the angels, or at the Jesus' tomb, the angels there. In the Revelation chapter 21, verse 23, and the city had no need of the sun, neither of the moon to shine in it, for the glory of God did lighten it, and the Lamb is the light thereof. So the better question is, who is light? Jesus said, I am the light of the world. The desert is overwhelmingly bright during the day and extra dark at night. To travel in the desert at night is to walk in the shadow of death. If you think about deadly snakes and whatever along the way. Zacharias prophesied to give light to them that sit in darkness and in the shadow of death to guide our feet into the way of peace. The light of Jesus is safety for the Christian on his journey of life. Simeon, holding the Christ child in his arms, mused, light to the Gentiles and glory light of thy people Israel. It's only through Christ that we Gentiles have the same access to God as the Jew. Jesus is indeed the light of the world. On this dark night in the black desert of sin, wouldn't you want to follow the light of life? Jesus says, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Everybody doing okay? You want to stand up for a minute? Go ahead, stand up. We're breaking sequence now in which John records these great metaphors in his gospel by going now to I am the true vine. We're going to John chapter 15. You may be seated again. You might want to turn to that in your Bibles. John chapter 15, verses 1 through 8. Likely, the setting here is the Last Supper, or maybe the walk to the Mount of Olives. If so, then, wine was in focus. I am the true vine, Jesus said. Vineyards abounded in Palestine. Once more, Jesus would use common, well-understood phenomena to illustrate the truth about who he is, truth which had been previously concealed. Mystery, previously concealed truth. I am the true vine. Let's read John chapter 15, begin reading at verse 1. I am the true vine, words of Jesus, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abide in the vine, no more can ye except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit, for without me ye can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit, so shall ye be my disciples. In this great metaphor, Jesus is saying, I am the lowly vine growing out of the dirt. Not a tall cedar or a strong oak, just a lowly vine. God, my Father, is the vine dresser, and you, Jesus is saying, my followers, are the branches from which my Father anticipates an abundant harvest of fruit. The branches that need to be trimmed away, verse 2, are professing Christians who appear to be flourishing, but upon closer examination are barren. The fair blossoms of profession have fallen off. No fruit. The vine dresser doesn't need to think twice. These branches are promptly cut off and discarded. Without connection to the vine, they will either wither I'm sorry, they will wither and die. Hypocrisy, backsliding, both are repulsive to God. But on the other hand, verse 2, he cleanses and repeatedly prunes every branch that is united to the vine by faith, and that truly derives grace and strength from that vine. These branches continue to bear more, richer, excellent, abundant fruit. The pruning will make it bear even more abundantly. Verse 4, no branch can bear fruit on its own. That is, without vital connection to the vine. Verse 5, plentiful quality fruit can come about only with that vital, solid, unyielding connection between vine and branch. Though the great vine dresser's pruning may seem severe, its purpose is always greater production of abundant fruit. To bear fruit is to show by our lives that our unyielding attachment to the vine is producing in us its appropriate effects. Galatians 5. As a vineyard is worthless unless it bears fruit that blesses many, even so, a Christian's life might be considered worthless unless he lives that others may be made holy and blessed by his example. Verse 8, abundant fruit proves that we are truly followers of Jesus and ultimately glorifies the great vine dresser. May that be our purpose.